Hi, Jack.
Hello, how you doing, Robin?
You have a new album coming out. You have new music. I wrote something down, and it was, I think, in the track by track, and you kind of mentioned this as to be the ethos of the new record. I don't know why, it just felt right. How did that become the ethos of kind of this album project?
Oh my God. Like, I suppose when I wrote it, it made sense, but now it's like, it's a weird one. I think, like, yeah, while recording it, sort of like I try to sum up Corn Crumpets' discography into one record. So that was sort of the gist of it. So I think everyone was sort of, now we're getting to, was it our sixth album? I think it's our sixth album. So I was trying to basically get everything together so that when people say, like, what should I listen to first? It'd be like, all right, give Fronzoli a crack. And then you can go backwards and see what's happening. So that was sort of the game plan before I started recording.
But that's interesting that you say that, because I do hear a lot of the influences that you've talked about in the past on this album. There's a lot of, I think, Britpop influence, or I can hear certain British elements in the melodies and those kind of things. But then there's obviously that psych rock Australian kind of vibe, the fuzzy guitars. There's a lot in there. How do you marry all those ideas?
Oh man, like just hit record and hope is usually the being of it. But no, I think like after one track feels good and feels right, and maybe I'm finished with it, I try and work from there. And it was before on a couple of albums, I had like a bunch of songs that I would like keep going and keep going, and then afterwards try and mix match and see where the album track list would sort of sit. And this time around, it was like as soon as I had Nootmare, I was like, all right, that is track one. And I sort of scrapped like the 40 tracks beforehand and was like, all right, that's sort of the vibe. And we'll go forward in that. So everything sort of had to be a bit more quirky and a bit weirder and go into something else. So where a song starts, it sort of needs to finish somewhere else, which I really liked. But then I wrote, I think it was Captain Gravity Man's Welcomes, and I was like, oh, I really like that. It kind of doesn't fit on the record, but it's just such a nice song that I was like, oh, I gotta keep it there. So
But I do think it fits in to some sense with the rest of it. Yes, it has a somewhat different vibe, but the fuzzy guitars are still coming in, and so there's still
yeah.
that kind of overall through line.
So I was just saying, no, I just really enjoy that track. I think that's the one where if it comes on, I think because it is different, I'm like, all right, I need to. There's something in that which feels like it could be a whole nother project, so which I'm sort of doing at the moment.
Okay. Well, that's interesting, because I mentioned kind of the British influence, and this song was described as Beatles in Japan vibes. So and you've talked about the Beatles before, but can you kind of talk a little bit about that influence of British rock and pop music, like the Kinks, the Beatles, and how that kind of shaped your musical outlook on, in a way?
I think it literally, if I'm listening to music, which seems to be rare, I suppose because I like record a lot. So when I am listening to stuff, it's usually the stuff I've recorded to listen back and try and make tweaks and bits and pieces. So when I hear like a finished song that's mixed and mastered, I'm like, oh my God, why doesn't mine sound like that? And it's sort of like it, comparing it to like the height of these number one records from Radiohead, it was like you said. But rarely, like if I go back to sort of just the bedrock of what I listen to, it would definitely be Beatles, Kinks, and then moving forward, Radiohead. And I had like a full thing as well where it was like Blur, Oasis, and I kind of like as much as those two were like battling each other, they're like quite similar in a vein, which I don't know, I kind of really dig Oasis. They're just good, catchy tracks that just rip, like you can put it on, and there's some great album tracks in there. Be like, whoa, like that's like that melody is like it's beautiful. And so, sort of coming across from that and trying to more bring that into a psych world or into a fuzzy guitar world, I still feel like there's room for melody rather than just being like rah, like headbanging kind of thing. So, I do like a big chorus or sort of a bridge or somewhere that it's going to take it so it feels like it expands rather than hitting one note for 5 minutes. Also, it would just be a punk band, which I think is nice. It's still fun, but like playing it live when it does open up and you're like, all right, cool, like it's going somewhere. The set feels like we can play for an hour and a half and we're not getting bored, which is nice.
Oh, but it's interesting that you say that because that's what I hear in it as well. You have that kind of that musical bed that it's laying in, but there's still very melodic vocal lines, and there's a pop sensibility in those lines. So it's a really interesting mix, I think.
Oh, thanks.
This is just an assumption, but how do you work? Do you have a home studio where you can immediately record ideas?
Yeah, so it's basically where you are looking at me right now is the studio. So it's sort of like the
Right.
computer's face itself, but it's, man, it's as primitive as it comes. I should really sort of spend a bit more time working out how to record better and what I need to get my guitar tone sounding right and the drums sounding good and what bass is going through. Like, I think vocals, I started to find a real good, clean way to sort of punch that through as before I was doing it. I would always use the same guitar effects and bass effects, but singing through the like guitar, sorry, the vocals would come through that one as well. So in previous records, you're like, what the hell is he saying? So this time around, I was like, well, like I'll clean up the vocals and then sort of purposely made the lyrics weird as possible. So even if you hear the lyrics, it's sort of like, I don't know, it's a bit of gibberish anyway. But then there's meaning behind it. I don't know.
We'll talk about the lyrics in a second, but what I find interesting then about the kind of having that home studio or a place where you can kind of immediately when an idea comes in, kind of jot it down or at least have a small recording of it. Since 2016, and you mentioned it, six albums have come out, which is quite a lot. So are you very productive?
Oh man, I've been in here today from 9 o'clock to whatever, about a minute before we got on this podcast. Yeah, like
Okay.
I've been working away. So my brain's probably a bit scrambled because it's thinking about other bits and pieces. But I mean, like, I love it. I did have a point where I was playing a bunch of golf beforehand, like halfway through last year. And so I was allowing myself a bit of time to like go and do things or go down the pub, see people. And I thought of like after we got back from tour, it was like all I really, if I nailed it down to one thing, it would just be like recording. I don't know. There's like a nice escapism, which I feel like people play games, people do this, but I think like recording is definitely just the way I switch off. So to be able to have that to work in with the band and have that now, like as a monetary outcome, it's weird. It's like I don't want it. I don't want to weigh the monetary thing on it, so I still want to enjoy it. So it's like, all right, like just don't think about that. Else you'll end up writing some shitty pop music that you think is good that people want to hear, and you'll eventually just shoot yourself in the foot. So yeah, try and keep it as much as a hobby as possible without it. And then if we do play all these shows and go on tour and keep writing albums, that is the byproduct of me just switching off, I suppose.
What is the magic then in, like you said, there's all kinds of ways to get your minds off things. People play sports, people play video games, there's all kinds of things. What is it about being in the studio that you enjoy so much? Is it kind of the creative making something out of nothing, or is it the technical aspect? What are you honing in on?
Yeah, both. It is like just you're creating something which you don't know where it's going to go, or there might be a, like I've never sort of had an idea and tried to get it down. I think I've done that maybe two or three times, and it's always ended up something completely different to what I intended it to be. So it's sort of like I'll have a little guitar line or maybe a melody or something that I'll get down first, and that might eventually be the bridge for the rest of the track. Do you know what I mean? It's nice
Right.
you can sort of change it around. So rather than writing everything on an acoustic guitar or a guitar and it's sort of linear and you're trying to get the song down perfectly, I think seeing it as the way Ableton is, it's like gridded. So it's like kind of it's now like a puzzle. It's like literally just some weird musical puzzle where you're like, all right, well that can go there or this goes there. And try not to like copy and paste too many bits, but like basically just get that the idea or whatever it can become as fully as possible. And then once you've got to 6 or 7 minutes, try and condense it down so it's enjoyable for you to listen to. So hopefully it's enjoyable for other people to listen to as well.
Oh, that's an interesting thing as well, because especially I think in the studio with these kinds of undertakings, you can really get lost in it. You can obsessively focus on the tiniest of things. So you
And you
mentioned,
go,
go
hone in on a snare drum for hours or
ahead.
like a guitar tone. So yeah, I've tried to get rid of that now, which is sort of, I feel like I'm moving more productively if I'm just like, all right, I'll fix up that thing later. Or even if there's like one sort of bum note, like sometimes that can work weirdly because it might be like just in enough key or a note or a chord that like, well, that linked to this thing, but it didn't link to where the song was going. So maybe I'll change the bit before so it will go off into this way. So it's like, it's always meandering and like, I suppose, yeah, it's like a wave, you're just trying to ride it.
Is there one example of that you can give that ended up on the album where an idea all of a sudden took a left turn and then went in a completely different direction?
Every single song, like every single song. I mean, if you start with Nightmare, that riff, I think I was tuning up at jam, and so I was stretching out the G strings, like diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle. Like I was sort of, that came to mind, and then I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And it's funny, like if I show a band a riff, they'll hate it, like because they're like, well, I don't know. Like sometimes they get it, like sometimes they're like, well, I'll see it, or I might be like, oh, let's play this drum part of this, but. If I tend to show them like a finished song, they're like, oh, I kind of, it's a lot easier to grasp what's there. It's like finished. So when I'm sort of writing, it's like, it could go, there are at least 30 different saved versions of the song before it sort of maybe finds its right place. So I'm always going back to like Nightmare 21, Nightmare 30. I'm like, oh, that's like, sit. Like I learned to save in a good way because before I was like, Nightmare, finish, A, one. And I'd be like, which one was the bit? So yeah, trying to go chronologically with how it is. But yeah, like I think once I found the sort of sample based bridges and things like that, and I wanted it to be more like, I don't know, like an MF Doom record. I remember listening to that like when we were on tour once. I was like, man, this is so sick. Like, and it's just, it just flows. So I sort of was like, all right, how do I sort of bring that over to this record so that all those sort of samples that I got, and it might be like a little spoken word, and I'll add some sort of synth or something else I found. And I had more fun making them sometimes because I'm like, it's not music, but it's something different where you're like, oh, there's a bunch of interesting things that have come together in a new way that then lead off into another song. So, but they might fit before any track, but I think it was like, all right, that feels like it's gone, so we'll go up. Well, this feels like it's going down, we'll move it there and see where it sort of takes.
It's like you say, you're kind of trying to complete that puzzle where will it fit nicely, and adding those textures to make the whole album kind of flow into each other. Well, you can definitely hear that on the album. What I find interesting then as well is I read that you try to write as much, and you mentioned the acoustic guitar earlier. You try to write kind of on the acoustic a lot, and was there any specific reason for it? Is it kind of you wanted to make sure the song would still be a good song if everything was stripped away? Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, that was 100% sort of the idea with, I mean, I would start off that way, and then the acoustic guitar that I did put in, it would quickly become scrapped for some fuzzy guitar. But yeah, I think I was talking to my friend Alex, and he plays another band, and we started doing a little project together. But like the way that he would write, it's like if you can hear it on acoustic, it's like it's still known. So I think I was trying to bring that across, but obviously when you're doing a lot of riffs, it's like completely different. But so songs like Captain Gravity Mouse or Mr. and Mrs. Misanthrope, like that sort of ending track, like there'd be ideas that were sort of trying to tie together into the heavier world. So I mean, it's literally like the thing that I don't even have a stand for it. It's like, it's just, if I put it on a stand, it's not there. It's like right here, and I'll be working out. If I've got a bunch of tracks that, or a song that is sort of coming out, I'm like, oh, I can't really hear what it is. I'm just trying to play the note form to it on the acoustic. So it's like, all right, there it is. Like, or harmonize with that and be like, well, that's the vocal pattern. I can work with it. So it's the loudest instrument in a mix as well. It's like, it doesn't even need to be mic'd up. It's just like, all right, that's going to shine. It's going to shine through anyway. So, and also, it just adds a percussive element as well. If you scrapped it out, it's like a shaker. So you've sort of got these extra layers. I know Ty Segall, after listening to a lot of music that does it well, with the rock music that does it, like Ty Segall just nails it. His acoustic vibes that were nice. And then he adds like a whole another layer on top. You're like, whoa. And I think that took me a while. It's hard to listen to music, I think, like without it being one big picture. Like if you sort of pick other things that you didn't notice the first time of listening, you're like, oh, it kind of ruins the listen for you, but it does.
I know that feeling, yeah.
Yeah, open up a whole new world of what you can hear in other people's songs.
Yeah, it's kind of one of the paradoxes of doing this job as well, where I sometimes overanalyze songs that you just have to listen to.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, as soon as you start doing it, you're like, yeah.
You're dissecting everything. Oh, this little bit here and this little bit there.
Yeah, I think that's what's great about the old school recordings. It just feels so right. Like there is either you've heard it a million times or it just feels right. Like Bowie seems to do it a lot where you're just like, wow. Yeah, like you couldn't imagine it any other way than it is. And the string arrangements and the acoustic guitars and like just one big wailing like electric guitar. Like to sort of pick apart that, you would have a hard time because it's correct. But then there's no corrections in music. So it's like, what is right? What is wrong? But then,
well,
I don't know.
That's the thing. Yeah, you know, it's a lot of music is about emotion and about feeling. And then if you try to kind of consciously dissect everything or make sense of it, then sometimes it doesn't work, which I found out over the years as well.
Oh, man. I always do the, if I get to it, I do the old, like, hold yourself and shake routine. You're sort of, like, on tempo and you're like, oh, now I'm going a bit weird. It's like, all right, now that song's out. Like, we got to find, you got to sort of be in the right headset the whole way through. And then, all right, there we go. Should be able to enjoy it from point one to point two.
Right. Because we talked about the guitar, then Illusions of Grandeur, is it then difficult not to stick it full of fuzzy guitars and all that? How do you kind of refrain from
that? That was like a track that I purposely left just because I was like, that's sort of how everything begins. So it's sort of like this thing, and it might be a finger picking one or a strummy sort of guitar, but I think it worked so nicely that in a previous record, I would have layered it with everything and violins and try to go to town on drums and different harmonies and guitars. But I think it was just like the idea of just having a acoustic guitar with the vocal pattern or the melody of it, like that was enough. And I think as well, like, I don't know, like I just, yeah, leaving it empty was really hard. So to do it, I felt like I'd done myself justice, if that makes sense. It was like, all right, I'm going to leave this one empty. And it felt like, right, I think that's nice. I enjoy that track. I forgot that was on the album, to be fair.
No, but what I also find interesting, you can, whenever a song calms down or it's a little bit more quiet, you can hear the vocals a little bit more. So were you aware of that? And kind of the...
Man, it's funny, like... So people were saying that, yeah, they were like, oh, you can actually hear yourself singing on this one. And they were like, you sound like Alex Turner. I was like, oh, damn. Like, he's got a great voice. So that was a compliment. But yeah, I think, and obviously that was such a big wake-up call as well with recording. So for years, layering everything, finding every single frequency and filling it, to being able to have space and then filling the gaps. It was like, oh my God. Like, so that's been a new revolution for me, to be sort of like, all right, like, scrap the drum kit, scrap the fuzzy guitars. Yeah, we're just going fully acoustic.
Now, I do want to talk about the lyrics a little bit, but as we mentioned, I don't want to overanalyze any of them. I don't think that's very fruitful.
Let's
but
do it. Let's do it.
For you, in terms of, because you mentioned kind of the stream of consciousness writing and having placeholders here and there, and then perhaps later figuring out, oh, I was thinking this, or this was where my mind is at. What was your approach, particularly on this album, in terms of the lyrics? And because there's a song about your cat, I think you mentioned a couple of friends. There's all these very interesting kind of influences or things you talk about. So how is it just random almost?
It's random to the point where it's like maybe a day has gone past and like weekend has sort of come back into some memory set, and I'm like, oh, I'm talking about it or something previously. But I think like the thing I as much as I enjoy it with the Beatles and the Kinks when they write about something that didn't happen, I can't do that anymore. I can't do it. It seems fake. It's like, I don't know, you're writing in second person about someone who's doing something else. And I'm like, well, why don't you just write about your own experiences? Like, not that I'm having a go at them, but
Oh,
I think
sure.
it's brilliant. Like, I absolutely love that music. It's more so, I think, just me personally, it's like a diary. It's kind of like, well, this is here, then splurge it out into music form and then maybe go back. I used to sort of go back and try and make it sort of cognitive. So it was like, all right, there you go. You've got like an idea. There's the lyrics, they're flowing. Now it's sort of making sense in a story. But I think because if I'm don't have the vocal melody at first, I'll be like, blah, 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 or whatever. I get like the thing, but I'm saying some sort of word. So I think Pill House was actually the words that came out of my mouth. Like, I
Okay.
didn't even change that. There wasn't even, I didn't even write lyrics. And I got a whole sheet of like lyrics down where I would write things down usually and go, like, well, that doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. But I felt like it was more of a, like, there'll be a bit more of an abstract sort of pattern to the album that was different to other things that I've done previously. But then I was like, is that considered lazy? But I was like, no, because it's sort of still coming out of your brain, but it's not. Like you've just that's the vocal melody. So the I kind of treated it if it was singing in another language. Do you know what I mean? Like you
Sure.
so if I'm listening to some foreign music that I don't know what they're saying, but I love the melody, I'm probably not gonna go and research the lyrics because I enjoy it, because it would be like they might be like, I love the sky. The sky was blue. It's like, man, that's shit. Like so it kind of doesn't really matter, but it does. So I don't know. But man, moving forward, I will completely spend the next record focusing on the lyrics. I think that's what I do that. I go through modes and changes, and I'm like, all right, well, I didn't do it this time around. I'll do it tenfold the next one.
It's very interesting the way lyrics work, and there's so many ways of kind of filling it in. I find it interesting. I used to listen to a lot of Bob Dylan and those kind of folk singers, and really the storytelling country music, and then
Brilliant,
that the
brilliant. It was
narrative part of that's beautiful. But then, as you say, the abstract, kind of David Bowie sometimes, and then those types of music, and even the Beatles and Oasis, they can be very abstract and just nonsensical.
yeah.
And
There was another one where it was Marky Mark from The Fall. He would have the same sort of approach where it was like he'd just start off. I think he'd just be like, I'm walking down the street, and then all of a sudden something completely weird happens, but he sort of just makes it up. And I kind of dig that. It's like you don't know where his brain is going either. So that is almost enticing you to reach the end. And I think, like, I was actually a horrible analogy when people were saying, like, when they listen to music, they only listen, or the average person listens to 7 seconds before they skip it. So if you've given, I wish I didn't know that. Do you know what I mean? I wish you could just be like, all right, that's out of my brain. Like, just write 10 minutes. But if you've got to captivate people in 7 seconds, not that that's the goal, but it's almost too hard to miss sometimes. So you're like, let's fill it. And now I'm sort of going back and trying to rework that. But like a lot of the times, like that would be a song as well. It's like, here's a nice thing to captivate you to move on. And especially with myself, I reckon I'm 3.5 seconds and I'll skip the song. So.
Well, you did well with Nightmare then, because that one straight in there. Last thing I want to talk about is playing live, because the last time we spoke, you mentioned that playing live was the best kind of period of playing live, or the energy you had for it. It was perfect. I don't know if you have played in the last 6 months, or if you've been mostly working on the album, but now looking at the end of the year, I think your release show is in a week or so, and then you do a couple of shows, and then next year you come to Europe. What are you looking forward to in terms of being on the road and playing these songs?
Like we just got home about a week ago from North America, and
Okay.
it was sort of at the point where we stopped drinking like fully, like before shows, just because we were like, let's nail the best performance we can. I think that was never something that was in our repertoire before, which was like we were always just there because we were like, oh, like it's a fast-paced kind of music. Let's kind of have a beer and get around the buzz. And then I think we realized it was like, oh, okay, it's not even about us at all. It's like the music that we create is, I like it. But then if we're doing it injustice playing live after a couple of beers, then we're not doing anything a favor. So we're like, all right, play sober, afterwards have a beer, like go hang out, like chill. But I think the OCs did that too. I think I was talking to John Dwyer about it, and he was like, no beers, like, we're doing this. This is like, we've got to make the song sound good. And I was like, oh my God, like that's a thing. And I think, I suppose, like no one else goes to work like
an epiphany. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it was. Like no one just goes to be a lawyer and they're like, oh yeah, they got a rider. And they got like 40 beers. It's just like, all right, like I'm ready. It's like, it's a weird kind of thing. So a bit of self-control, a bit of self-management. And to play live now, it's like way more exciting. I think I'm focused on doing the right thing and getting it right and focusing on my voice and focusing on guitar parts. And we went and saw Animals as Leaders. Like, we're playing a festival with them where Toast and the Bar seems bad. I was like, oh my God, like, how the hell can that guy remember anything? And I don't know, it was like just another revelation where you're like, okay, like, I need to go back to learn the guitar to even get close to what that guy's pushing the boundaries of now. So I think, like, in that world where you play live, there's so many different realms of what music can be called, and what styles and genres and ways you can sort of entertain. But I suppose when you do put it down to it, we're all in the entertainment business, so you're still just, people jump off how you're enjoying yourself. So I think for us to be able to have a healthier way to like play live and get it right, like that is what I'm really looking forward to. It's about, we want to sound great. I think that now is sort of the new Porn Crumpet mantra.
I always wondered that because I read a lot of those rock and roll autobiographies, Motley Crue, Slash, all those guys. And I always wonder in the 80s and early 90s, what those shows, were they even good or were they just
knocked
out on the floor?
The show must have been awful. People must have been there like, this guy is absolutely off his rocket. Like, But then in his biography, he's like, we were great, like, selling out shows.
Yeah, or was that still the time where it didn't matter? Because it kind of shifted, right? Where initially you played live to sell records, and now it's the other way around in a way.
Oh, 100%. Like, yeah, like we just, I suppose, it's almost weird. Like, there's two versions of the band. It's the live band, and there's the recording of it. But we're playing the songs, but I think nowadays people go and see a show even without even hearing the music. We were getting that a lot. Like, people would come up and be like, oh, like, I've heard your live band. So we came and watched it. And then they were like, really enjoyed it. And so, and then sometimes you get people and we're like, oh, your songs sound nothing like they do live. So it's like, but in a good way, I think it's like, we're adding something to it. We're not taking it away. It's not like trying to sort of emulate the record. We're like, all right, we're just five people trying to do that, but that's the sort of that's the table of how the song is. Like, let's push it forward and see what else can come out of it. And I think that it's just like, it's enjoyable. It's great as well when we do go to Europe and we play some bigger shows than Australia, that you're sort of like wrapped up in a whirlwind of like, holy shit, this is life. I don't know, you forget that you're actually doing it.
Oh, that's cool. I think I'm not an artist. I've never been on stage, but I can imagine that's kind of the ultimate goal of playing live, where you're just in that flow state and just don't think about it.
It's almost like the first song starts and then you finish and you're like, whoa, but you're drenched in sweat and then you're like,
what happened?
The moment you look up, you go, oh no, like I forgot what I'm doing. Like, so you're sort of just in your own world. But I would never take that for granted as well. I think we all said that. It was just like, there's such a great opportunity that, I mean, even to talk to yourself, like, it's mad, like, to be able to talk about what you do in a bedroom. Because it's like, people are like, how do you play PlayStation? That's kind of what it feels like. You're like, kind of, it's like, just kind of turn off. But like, unreal. Like, Really,
But
really
that's the magic
thankful.
of music, right? I mean, that's the fact that people halfway across the world and may not even speak the language or whatever, they can feel something in it or can find something in it. That's
Yeah.
kind of, to me, the most beautiful thing about music.
100%. And there isn't a right answer. So it's like,
Right.
there's so many bands that have like 12,000 listeners, or not even, they might have 500 monthly listeners or something. And you're like, I love this. Like, why is no one around? It's weird. It's strange how music works like that. It's not so much the popularity contest, but it's what relates to you.
Yeah. Final question, Franzoli. And I Googled it, and it was an Italian translation roughly into bells and whistles. Is that right?
Is that what it was? No, like, there was a dictionary.com and like description of it that says it's the something added unnecessarily as decoration. So it's like an unnecessary amount of decoration. So I thought that was a perfect word to describe the band. I was like, that's all we are. Just unnecessary, but we're decoration. So it felt right for that to be the album title.
That's excellent. Jack, may I, as always, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Oh, Robin, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on.